I'll call the meeting back to order from our recess. And members, this is the day when we're going to, of course, mark up the omnibus bill. We have this room as long as we want, so for the first time all year, we will not be rushed. And so that doesn't mean, though, that the chair still likes to hear long-winded anything, but we are in a little better shape than we have been before. And before we start our serious work of the day, I think that since this is our last formal K-12 education finance hearing, I want to thank, and I think we all want to thank, our wonderful staff that we have who are with us every step of the way, and without them, we would never be able to function. They keep us organized and give us much, much help. And I want to start with Nicole Kaplan and Megan Swanberg. If you two could stand up. Thank you very much. And we have our DFL staff person, Brad Kelly, and Republican Research, Carmen Carter, who I don't see. Where is she? Oh, she's not at the table today. Okay. Well, thank you. From House Research, Jason Keenly is way back in the court, in the reviser's office, I'm sure. And we have, speaking of House Research, we have Kim Strom and the House Fiscal Analyst, Greg Crow. And I'm not used to House Researcher Lisa Larson being at the table, but of course, because we have the policy bill, we need her very much with us as well. So thank you, Lisa. And Tim Strom has a wonderful a research assistant with him today, and we haven't met her yet, so I think we'll make her stand up. Molly McGraw, and she's a Humphrey student. Where is she? There she is, standing up. And Tim said she has done a very nice job working with him, so thank you for that. We have our session weekly reporter, Chris Berggren, who's been actually writing more about education than any reporter I recall. So thank you, Chris, very much. And then we have the ones I work with the very most, Shannon Patrick and Liz Mandelman, our committee administrator and our committee legislative assistant. And all of you work with them. I miss anybody. Help me out here if I did. I didn't mean to. Okay. So thank you very much. And we don't, any of them go away. We need them all with us because this is the hardest day. We do some things that we don't do all the time. And the first one of those is, for those of you on education policy on Representative Mariani's committee, you already know about this, but in your packet, we copied them. They Representative Mariani at his private job, he said for meetings that they have, they usually have goals, and then they evaluate at the end of every meeting. And we're not doing this at the end of every meeting, but we are doing it at the end of the year, so that if you would all and fill this out, your name is optional, but I think since we're public legislators, people could feel free to leave their name if they wish. And then the three questions that we had in Representative Mariani's committee, how well do you think the K-12 Education Finance Division address the committee members' priorities for 2009. And in case your memory is failing you on what you said your priorities were, our staff has put them in the file here. And the ones in italics are what you said your district's priorities were, and the ones that are not in italics are what you said your own personal priorities for the year were. So you can evaluate how well did we do on those, and remind yourself that, you know, despite of how frustrated we get with what we can accomplish around here, I think we've accomplished a lot when you look at all the members' priorities. Then number two, which one of these priorities or any other topics do you think should be studied in the interim? And then number three, of the things you put down in number two, what, if any, of those things would you be interested in working in a working group on? And then we will use these and figure out what our working groups are, and then we'll have some things ready for next year. And I'll thank Rep. Mariani, because I don't think he was here when I said these are what we're copying from your very fine committee procedure. So thank you. So if you could pass them in to either Liz or Shannon before you leave today. So now I have to find my script here. There it is. All right. I will move House File 2 be recommended to pass and returned to the Finance Committee. And then next, I will move, you know, as you know, that is the new Minnesota Miracle Bill, but we have a slightly different bill before us today. So I will move the A090404, Delete All Amendment. And that's, of course, the big thick one that we all have. And is there any discussion on this amendment to get the bill in shape? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails, and the Delete All Amendment is adopted. Okay, so now we're ready to do. We have about 19 or 20 amendments all together. They're all turned in pretty much by the deadline of 6 o'clock. We did take a couple stragglers, but you were all pretty good about getting them in on time, and I appreciate that very, very much. My amendment I'm going to do first, which is just the author's amendment to get, if I can find something here. I've already lost it. Thank you. That's not the one. No. I want my note.
You know, Madam Chair, you have to have something to lose it first.
Or Representative Brackett? What's that?
Oh, I was making a joke. I'm sorry. Apparently it didn't go over as well as I thought it would. You said you've lost it, and I said you have to have something to lose it, but apparently that's not as funny as I thought it was. So. Okay.
I'm ready to say to the speaker and say anybody but him for the minority member. Okay, here it is.
Madam Chair, anybody?
Okay, I will move the A40 amendment. And the A40 amendment is a technical amendment, and I will just tell you what it is briefly, but I don't think there's anything here that's too pertinent. The first line 15 is something that was raised by the School Board Association to make sure that the OPEB legislation is referring to when the bonds are issued. Then there's some very technical implementation date corrections or technical amendments for the integration revenue plans. The repealers are correcting the repealer effective dates that have to do with the special ed legislation, and then there's some citations added in there. And if anyone wants to know any more about it than that, that is all I know, because there's nothing in here that's controversial, according to our reliable and trustworthy staff. Any questions on the A40 amendment? All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the A40 amendment is adopted. Members, now we are going to go to the A35 amendment. And if you keep your amendments in the order that they're in, because generally speaking, that's the order we're going to take them up in. But we're first going to do the A35 amendment. And there's a couple of amendments in here that are not going to be offered at all. But the A35 amendment is Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, I'll move the A35 amendment.
Representative Morgan moves the A35 amendment. Representative Morgan.
The A35 amendment takes out the section of the bill dealing with the alternative teacher licensure program, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on the A35 amendment? Hearing that, oh, Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair and members, I would oppose the 35 amendment. We've already talked about this provision in both committees at length, so I'm not going to belabor the point. Other than to say that you know, this author and the authors of the bill, you know, we're always looking for you know, a tool that could work within the existing state law that assists on the books in terms of alternative teacher licensing prep. And our thinking was that what's currently in the book really you know, is void of any kind of meaningful standards. So we're looking for good standards to be able to respond to very real needs. I know folks have disagreed whether or not those needs exist, but we're hearing directly from districts that, in fact, there are very real shortage needs in certain fields and in certain geographies. And members, you know, it's not lost on me that a good chunk of those communities represent very low-income communities with high concentrations of poverty as well as students of color. It's a much bigger discussion for us to figure out why it's hard for those communities to be able to find sufficient candidates in certain fields to be able to fill their teacher needs. I'm not going to get into that today, but I just want members to know that that was always the motivation behind it. And we were, you know, in my mind, unfairly criticized publicly for leading an effort to lower standards in our state. I've been subject to those descriptions in the past when we attempted to modernize our assessment efforts. And I frankly don't know a single member in this body from either party that's interested in lowering standards at all. That's certainly not the intent of this legislation, simply an intent to provide an additional complementary tool for those districts that, in fact, are having a difficult time making the kind of placements that their students deserve. And we've got a growing body of independently evaluated evidence across the nation that shows that certain types of these alternatives, if adhered to with the standards proposed in this language, is actually doing quite a bit of good. But nonetheless, and chair members, I get that change is difficult. I've been here 19 years. I know all about the pace of change. I look forward, depending on what the outcome of this vote is, I look forward to continuing to have this discussion based on principle. And I've had some very good discussions with Representative Morgan, the maker of the amendment. I saw very fruitful discussions. And with lots of stakeholders all around the table, I've learned the bill has, we've attempted to shape the language based on those learnings and those accommodations. We do know that the Senate has this provision, and I suspect that we will be having this discussion again, depending if the vote goes down here, but I'm thinking that the amendment will be adopted. But nonetheless, I suspect we'll continue to have a very important discussion here. Hopefully we can do that in a way that respects the both the excellent presence of our current teaching force in the state of Minnesota, but also responds to very real needs that really do exist. So, Madam Chair, I hold your amendment respectfully and look forward to the verdict from the committee.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. See no further discussion. All in favor of the A35 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
The amendment division has been called for. All those in favor of the A35 amendment, raise your hand. Thank you. interesting. There being 10 eyes and 11 eyes, okay? Okay. Oh, the nays. Okay, I'm sorry. The nays. If you're opposed to the A35 amendment, say nay. No, just kidding. Raise your hand. There being 11 ayes and 10 nays, the amendment is adopted. What members, there's one person in the audience that I did not see and I did not introduce, and it is my intern, Eddie Oliver. If you could stand up. He is a student at McAllister, and he has been doing spectacular work. Thank you, Eddie. All right. The next amendment is the 8. Now, from now on, they should be in order. We're not going to be doing the A19 amendment or the A30 amendment, if you can find those in your packet, or we can tell you when we come to them. But the first one is the A24 amendment, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, this is the work group for the Early Graduation Achievement Act. We've been having some internal correspondence going back and forth in the fiscal note, determining what the fiscal savings will be. This will help us study the issue and find out if and what the amount of the savings will be.
Very good. And this is one that that I think is worth pursuing as well. I think it's not the full bill that Representative Garofalo proposed, but I think it's a reasonable step forward. Any discussion on the A24 amendment? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The A24 amendment is adopted. The A8 amendment, Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair, I'm going to withdraw that. But, you know, it's so nice outside. Could we have class outside?
Hey, that's right, I'm off of that. Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Quayle has the A26 amendment. Representative Quayle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an amendment that establishes educational expectations. So, I believe it applies to all state academic standards or local academic standards, and I would move this amendment.
Very good. Any discussion on the A26 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of the A26 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
The A26 amendment is adopted. A10, Representative Garofalo. Oh, I'm sorry. And this one is Representative McFarland.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A10 amendment.
Representative McFarland moves the A10 amendment. Representative McFarland.
This applies to the grad appeal. When we've been meeting in both education policy and finance, we've been hearing testimony about the math standards, the math test, but not the reading, and I would question, this is removing reading from the appeal. They have 2 years to remediate, and I don't think it's necessary to have reading included in this.
Any discussion on the A10 amendment? Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, members, I leave this to the, obviously, the wisdom of the committee. We did not, in fact, Representative Brown is correct, we did not, in fact, have testimony on the reading component. We did focus on the math. I think the math numbers, quite frankly, are incredibly troubling for us. The reading results are, my understanding, not as the same magnitude, but they are nonetheless troubling. They're particularly troubling, my understanding, where you have districts with large numbers of ELL learners, those learners who just barely, are required to take the test. It doesn't mean in my mind that eventually we don't have good readers out of them, but I think that, a high-stakes test, because that's the issue here, whether it's reading or math, a single instrument high stakes test that determines the ability for students to move forward is something that I question quite strenuously, particularly when you have large scale possible failures that we have. And I think there is a better way for us to do appropriate and fair assessment of students. Other states are doing other types of approaches. My hope is that we can use the sort of time out here with the grad language to be able to develop those other alternatives. And I would want some proposals for reading as well. Frankly, we spoke with Representative McFarland. Frankly, it is my hope that if we continue to have the discussion, regardless of the vote on the amendment here, that we have an intelligent discussion in terms of the application of high stakes tests, regardless of the subject area. So, members, I won't vote for it, but I certainly understand that Representative McFarland makes some very good points about the time period relative to being able to provide some remediation. I just want to err more on the side of really doing no harm to students and really fully questioning the use of single high-stakes tests, particularly these kind of tests that we have in the state of Minnesota as the end-all and be-all of whether or not a student can continue on with their education.
Representative Carla.
Yes, Madam Chair, I was wondering if the Commissioner to come speak about this or not?
Representative McFarland, we are not taking testimony today. We had testimony yesterday, and we made it very clear that we were not going to take time for that today. If there's any question or somebody doesn't know something at this table, and then the chair decides that we need that information, but I think this one, I think we're fully informed on it based on your comments as well as Representative Mariani. So any other discussion on the amendment? All in favor, then, of the A-10 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The chair believes that the amendment did prevail. Nobody questioned their the A7 amendment, Representative Dempsey. No, you wanted to do A20 first, am I correct? Representative Dempsey has A7 and A20. They're right next to each other, and I think you wanted to do A20 first, is what the staff told me. Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Dempsey, the A20 amendment.
And thank you for that.
If you could move the A20 amendment.
Well, Madam Chair, the A20 amendment isn't exactly the way I had anticipated it was going to look, and so I'm going to have to withdraw it.
The A20 amendment is withdrawn. How about the A7 amendment, Representative Dempsey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer the A7 amendment.
The A7 amendment is moved by Representative Dempsey. Representative Dempsey.
Madam Chair and members, if you remember, we had the quality achievement bill that I presented. We tried to fund diligence grants of $20,000 apiece for school districts to engage in the Malcolm Baldrige Quality Improvement Program or another program that's administered through the Minnesota Council for Quality. We had $20,000 for each school district to apply to use toward their application process. And if they were to achieve either the excellence or achievement level, they would be able to apply for grants and to go out and $500,000 to go out and work with school districts. And what I've done with this amendment, Madam Chair, is basically taken out the dollars and just set up and said, let's put the language in here to work with the Minnesota Council for Quality, encourage the commissioner to recognize schools, doesn't say how, just recognize them if they do achieve, and kind of plant the seed for looking at quality framework at a systemic organizational level. So, Madam Chair, that's what this amendment does.
Thank you, Representative Dempsey. And this one isn't written the way I was hoping it would be, because I was hoping you'd put it in as a process in the Article 9 and the new Minnesota Miracle as a process for the innovation revenue to be worked on, you know, in a group process and coming up with quality. Representative Dempsey.
Well, Madam Chair, I thank you. I should have talked with you.
You did. We had that conversation.
Well, not in that level of detail. I thought about doing that, but to be honest about it, I didn't want to mess with your language in the body of your bill, and I was afraid that if I did, that you'd think that was a good thing. So I thought I'll just put this in as it is and get it started, and then we could look at changing that. But we'll have more opportunities in this session, manager, to do that. So I'm open to that.
A stronger place to be, because now it just says school districts are encouraged, the commissioner may, you know, it doesn't, to me, really accomplish something strong like you could have had you taken my suggestion.
Well, I'm still open to that, Madam Chair. We'll have more opportunities. I've got at least, I'll have for sure one more chance of this thing, not including the House floor. So if you're open to that, we can, I'll put something together. And
if you want to withdraw this and work on
I'll,
that, I think
I'll do
that's
that.
Better.
All Thank
right.
you, I'll withdraw the
H7. The H7 amendment is withdrawn. Thank you, Representative Demmer.
Thank you.
A18, we're skipping over then the A19 amendment, and then we go to A, which is being withdrawn. The A18 amendment is Representative Becky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment...
if you could move the amendment.
Oh, I'd like to move amendment number A18, please.
And yes, Becky moves the A18 amendment, Representative Becky.
Okay, this amendment puts back into the language that was taken out of the QCOMP proposal evaluation team as it relates to school personnel conducting multiple teacher evaluations. The reason that I'm doing that is the use of an evaluation team empowers teachers to provide meaningful feedback to colleagues and moves away from just one person controlling another's compensation. Merit pay back in the 80s failed mostly due to the perception that bonuses were completely subjective. Using a evaluation team or the use of a team and observing teacher instruction will ensure the evaluation process is not a subjective process. I strongly support this. My school districts are very much in favor of QCOMP. They use an evaluation team currently and are very much in support of it. So and that's the reason that I'm bringing this forward.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on the A18 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A18 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion passes and the A18 amendment is adopted. A15 is Representative Slocum, and just as people are working ahead, she's withdrawing the next one after this, the A30 amendment, which we're not going to do. But the A15 amendment, Representative Slocum.
I'd like to move the A15 amendment, please.
Representative Slocum, move the A15 amendment. Representative Slocum.
This is an amendment in the charter school provision that I worked with Representative Norton over. And what it does essentially is it specifies that charter schools must comply with the laws as far as forwarding student records. So that if a child leaves a school, a charter school, the records then follow the child to the next school. And it's in statute that this puts it in the provisions for charters.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on the A15 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of the A15 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. The A15 amendment is adopted. A23, Representative Mariani.
I'm sure I move the A23 amendment.
Representative Mariani moves the A23 amendment. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, the A23 amendment is basically the bill that I introduced to put Minnesota Reading Corps into statute. The current bill does have the appropriations that the governor has recommended for Minnesota Reading Corps. I think there's good bipartisan support for that, but the way it's currently structured in statute is it flows through a Head Start part of the law, and that has to do with the peculiarity of how that was put together in conference committee a couple of years ago. And so this would essentially create a clear statutory site for the Minnesota Reading Corps program. It also removes the language having to do with additional training that was contracted out to the St. Croix River Education District, since that's no longer being used and no longer needed. So it's good language to be clear about the Minnesota Reading Corps, and removed obsolete language that's still there from when the reading plan was still first put together in town.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mariani. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, two questions. First, is there any fiscal impact for the modification of Section 47?
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I believe not, no. I mean, we currently have the appropriation identified in the current bill and for subject to whatever we would then appropriate in any given year.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, the language we're deleting, St. Croix River Education District is aware of this. This is not a surprise to them. It's not going to be, we're not going to be getting hundreds of emails tomorrow on this.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, you and I are both looking forward to not getting hundreds of emails on a number of issues. I believe that they are. They do exist, are in play in other parts of my understanding and other legislation. I think, I'm going to get in trouble. I'm thinking early childhood, but perhaps not. But yes, they are aware that we are dealing with obsolete provisions.
Any other questions or discussion on the 823 amendment? I've been told to hang on, so I'm hanging on.
Yep.
The staff must have a question for or a technical thing. Mr. Crow.
Now that we're in the codifying this plan, we need to make reference in the appropriations to the new section.
All right, Representative Mariani, apparently you need a technical oral amendment. If you would like, I could read it from here, or we could run it down to you.
You can read it, Madam.
Okay, as soon as I get it exactly right.
Oh, you were buying them time, I see. Sorry, Tim, I haven't gotten on yet. I'm sure we can come back to this if you want me to withdraw it.
Representative Mariani, we can. I'll give them one more minute, though, since we're going pretty fast here, I think. All right. Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, with the codification of this program, it probably makes sense to amend the appropriation to specifically reference this new section of law on line 116 and 122. For D42, so
Representative Mariani moves the following oral amendment, Mr. Crow.
On page 111, line 15, delete 119A.50 subdivision 3 and insert 124D.42. And on line 111.22, delete subdivision 6.
So Representative Mariani incorporates this technical amendment into his amendment. Any further discussion or amending that we see needed here? And if not, Representative Mariani renews his motion that the 823 amendment, as amended, be recommended to pass. All in favor, adopted. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The A32 amendment, Representative Dabney.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A32 amendment before the committee.
Representative Dabney moves the A32 amendment. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This impacts integration aid and the changes that are already in the bill regarding integration aid. It clarifies the timeline for districts to submit their budgets and their plans to the department and for the department to act on those, aligning those timelines with districts' actual planning time and hiring timelines for the next school year. It clarifies the criteria for evaluation of those plans and budgets by the department and aligns that with the new expanded statutory language in the bill, and expands the discussion to the real-world barriers to integration that are outside of the control of districts, but the districts have to contend with, and hopefully that will enrich our future discussions.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Any discussion on the A32 amendment? All in favor then, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion passes and the amendment is adopted. The A39 amendment, Representative Biscuit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A39 amendment.
Representative Biscuit moves the A39 amendment. Representative Biscuit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this amendment deals with current law. It's actually just clarifying language. Right now, current law says if you have a racially segregated or racially isolated school districts, that the adjoining districts have to enter into discussions to create a plan. However, current law and rule is silent on the implementation of that plan. I think that's quite appropriate. For instance, could be just what happened this year. Two school districts working on a plan, got a plan together, and the economy bottoms out. And now, if the school districts were to implement that plan, it could be severely financially harmful for those school districts. This just makes law crystal clear that there is no statutory requirement to actually implement the plan.
And Representative Biscuit, this seems kind of weird to me. And so Commissioner Segrin is in luck. We're going to call her up and help us out with this one. Apparently, the staff says that this was a real situation that Representative Biscuit is addressing here in the Lakeville School District, and that this is really how it was implemented. So clarifying the current implementation in statute is what's being done here, Representative Biscuit.
And Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Morgan whispered a question in my ear that I do want to make very clear. If they choose not to implement the plan, then of course they would get no integration revenue. Right, so there wouldn't be any revenue just because you talked about a plan. The revenue only comes if you actually implement it.
You know what, Representative Biscuit, of all the legislators here that I would suspect of trying to get money for nothing, you would be the last one. And I guess the commissioner has handed off to Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown, please help us out here.
Madam Chair, Morgan Brown with the Education Department. Representative Biscuit is correct in terms of the way that the both integration revenue statute and the desegregation rule are currently worded. Once a racially identified, racially isolated district and its adjoining districts are identified by the department, they are required to come together and form a multi-district collaboration council to develop a plan. But then whether the plan is actually implemented is left up to the individual districts, the school boards of the individual districts, and whether they ratify that plan or implement that plan. So they're not required to implement the plan, but then, of course, would not be eligible for integration revenue. And the particular example that was referred to is one that's not completed. It's in process, but it is a collaboration process between the Burnsville School District as the racially isolated school district and Lakeville as the adjoining school district. And Lakeville School Board recently made the decision, at least for now, to not go forward with a certain piece or a certain implementation component of the plan that had been developed.
So, Mr. Brown, none of the districts have to implement the plan, or is it only the adjoining districts?
Madam Chair, actually, under the rule, once they've developed the plan, the decision about going forward to actually implement it is left up to each of the individual school boards, whether you're an isolated district or an adjoining district.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Representative Mariani, and then Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, I just want to understand this. So, in essence, even without this language, apparently, the legislature, tell me if this is right, if it's wrong, tell me if it's wrong. The legislature is saying it's important for us to create integrated learning environments, and we're going to express that importance by requiring, under certain circumstances, districts to develop a plan. But the legislature is saying, but we're not requiring you to actually do anything. Is that the sum and substance of the current law?
Mr. Brown.
Madam Chair, Representative Marini, I might not phrase it quite that way, but there's a lot of deference in the DSEG rule given to local school districts and school boards to take action with regard to implementation of integration plans. So if the local school board chooses not to ratify the integration plan or not ratify certain components of it, it's not required by the DSEG rule to then implement those components of the plan. I think the presumption would be that they go back to the collaboration Restoration Council and work through this collaboratively. This would eventually get worked out, but essentially they couldn't be forced to implement a component of an integration plan that the school board did not ratify.
Rep. Demaryani.
And then, Madam Chair, Mr. Brown, I lost my train of thought here. Currently, what I want to get at is are there any unintended consequences with this language if we currently have that interpretation based on the deference that exists inside of rule? In other words, if we don't need to do anything, I just assume be a little bit cautious here because I'm not fully understanding whether there are any unintended consequences relative to this language in statute.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, as I read this language, it is reflective of the current the department's interpretation of the DSEG rule. So it's at least making clear with regard to adjoining districts that they're not required to implement a plan that the school board has not ratified in all or in part. So I'm not sure, I don't see particularly any unintended consequences. It's just taking a piece of what's already covered in the DSEG rule.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure Mr. Morgan, I understand, or Mr. Brown,
yeah, I did.
You've been around me too long, Representative Detmer.
I prided myself in not making a mistake.
I know you, that's my
fault. Mr. Brown, just so I'm clear, I think, is it now in current law that an adjoining district does not have to implement? I guess, quite frankly, it was my understanding that they did have to implement if they fell in the criteria, and that this now would give them the option of not. Am I wrong about that?
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, under the current rule, they are required to form a multi-district collaboration council and work on a plan, but they are not required to implement components of that plan that are not ratified by the individual school board. If it helps put in context, to date, we've never had a district simply outright refuse to implement any components of a multi-district plan unless it had some other kinds of, there are various exceptions into the rule, in the rule about districts not having to belong to more than one multi-district council thing. So there's legitimate exceptions in the rule, but we've never had a situation where a district has simply said, we're not going to ratify any component of this plan or not implement any of it. So usually it's a process by which the school board may not approve at a certain point or may decide not to proceed with a certain component of the plan, then they'll go back to the multi-district council and work that through until they can come forward with a plan that they all agree on.
So, Mr. Brown, so if this is already how the department is interpreting it, that it's optional, I'm wondering, Representative Diskins, then, why we have this even here. If you already have what you want, what if we vote this down? What does that mean for you?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. That would mean that ambiguity still remains, and as you can hear by the discussion, there is ambiguity out there. This is clarifying, nothing more. But as you know, when the ambiguity sits out there, you have entities that remain concerned, alarmed, up in arms. Well, now we can point right there. I wanted, Madam Chair and members, to be clear, or to be really precise. I asked I was considering asking Ms. Larson if she could use the phrase crystal clear, but she didn't want to put that in the statute, Madam Chair, and I do appreciate
that. You and I would
have done it. I have, Madam Chair. But as we hear by this discussion, there is ambiguity out there. This clarifies for the school district.
Okay, any other questions? Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Brown, if there's a collaborative and two or more districts join together to submit a plan, if one of those districts or more districts pull out, does the remaining district have to submit a new plan then in order to receive the segregation fund?
Mr. Brown.
Madam Chair, Representative Newton, obviously, I guess if it was just one racially isolated district and one adjoining district, and the adjoining district refused to implement a plan, that we would have a dilemma in terms of if the isolated district wanted to go forward with an integration plan and generate integration revenue. If there was more than one adjoining district, just because one district decided to not to go forward, that racially isolated district could still proceed with any other adjoining district that chose to go forward with an integration plan. But if it was just one of each, then it would be a problem, potentially.
Okay. And they wouldn't have to submit a new plan.
Well,
two or more.
Madam Chair, Representative Newton, you're correct. If it was two or more districts and one of the adjoining districts decided not to go forward with implementing the plan, we might ask for an amended plan that made clear that district was not going forward with the implementation. So they might have to do a new plan, but they would still be eligible for integration revenue for carrying out that amended plan.
It's Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, Representative Newton, to that point, that's no different than it is today. Again, this is just comfort language for those of us in the South Metro.
And so we've got it clarified. This is comfort clarifying language. And so whether we put it on or not today, and I guess nobody minds being comforted and clarified, we do have one of our working groups that, regardless of what people put on here, the chairs, Representative Brown and Representative Newton, are willing to continue working on the topic, and they need to, of integration funding. In our bill, as you know, we have the policy, but we didn't put in the funding. That's going to be continued to be working on, and some of these sorts of discussions may come up in the working group. So if anyone is interested in these topics, be sure to put them down in number three, that you'd be interested in working on this during the interim with Representative Brown and Newton. There are no other discussion. Representative Biskind renews his motion for the A39 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. The A39 amendment is adopted. A31 is Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, there are two portions to this bill, the change in proposed spending and then the allocation of those dollars. First of all, on page 2 of the A31 amendment, on page 5 of the A31 amendment, subdivision 4, what we're doing is we're capping the integration aid program as the governor has proposed. This is the example we highlighted earlier in session where we are seeing money being spent on the six-step hip-hop program, on kindness retreats, cultural liaison officers making $125,000 a year, integration program coordinators making $99,000 a year, secretaries for the integration program coordinator making $57,000 a year. We're taking those dollars and we're allocating them towards teachers in the classroom, specifically the Youth Teach program, the Teacher Training Program, the Principals Leadership Institute. Madam Chair, members, this seems like a pretty cut, straightforward amendment. We can look to having a unanimous support for it, and I ask for everyone's vote.
Representative Garofalo, ask for a roll call. Is that what you said?
No, ask for everyone's support.
Oh, everyone's support. Oh, well, I'm sure that'll happen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Garofalo, with 0-0 increase in the bill, isn't it capped already?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative District, no, it's not. What happens is that for districts that are expanding and for districts that are not included in the program yet but are expected to be included into it, that's where the additional appropriation comes. My recollection is we're at $7.9 million for the biennium, so it is not, unfortunately. I wish it was, but it's not.
And this was the governor's recommendation to cap and freeze integration revenue, and this bill does that and then spends the money on some of the governor's initiatives. Any other discussion of the A31 amendment? Representative Depke.
Just a quick comment, and I've said this before. My preference would be to follow the Senate language on this particular bill. My district, and I've said this a couple of times, are at the risk of losing almost $1 million in integration aid. Certainly, I would rather have it capped than to lose it, and I would love to see us do a group that would research this. But second to that, I think that following the governor's suggestion would be my preference if I have those two choices.
Right. Sometimes choices are limited around here. Any other discussion on the A31 amendment. Okay, hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion does not prevail.
Division?
Division has been called for. All those in favor of the A31 amendment, raise your hand. All those opposed, raise your hand. There being 8 ayes and 13 nays, the amendment is not adopted. A14, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, if we pass that, I'd like to move the A14 amendment.
Representative Biskin, move the A14 amendment. Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've had a pretty good 15-20 minute discussion now on immigration revenue, and I appreciate that. However, we could make it all moot by passage of the A14 amendment. What the A14 amendment does is it makes those hard choices that we've talked about here in a time of fiscal crisis. Madam Chair, members of this committee, I know that we have talked quite frequently about the shift and about how the shift is going to make it very difficult to do structural reforms in the future. Madam Chair, what this amendment does is it eliminates immigration aid and takes that off the statute books, as the legislative auditor's report pointed out a few years back. It is a program that hasn't shown a lot of success, and it takes that immigration aid and it purchases back some of the shift. And members, if you look at lines 1.11 to 1.14, you notice that the shift keeps purchased back a little more each year because immigration revenue is ongoing. We're able to continue to buy back the shift in hopes of creating an even newer new Minnesota miracle someday down the road. Madam Chair, I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Biskins, and I appreciate your coming forward with an amendment to address at least some of the shift. As you know, I hate shifts, and I hate the shift that is in this bill. Unfortunately, we wouldn't have a study group for Representative Newton and Representative Brown if we passed your amendment. Any other discussion? Representative Dabney and then Representative Garofalo. Representative
Dabney. Madam Chair, we would not have a study group for Representative Newton and Brown. We would, however, have more employment for trial lawyers when the lawsuits began over the repeal of immigration aid. We are more challenged as a country over issues of educational opportunity and race and class than we ever have been before, and repealing this aid would be a step well backwards to about at least 1952, I believe. So I would ask for folks' opposition to the A14.
Thank you, Representative Abney, and I strongly share your sentiments. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I'm sick of this shift. I'm sick of this shift.
Because we are in television. But it's quite here. He said shift. S-H-I-F-T-S. The accounting gimmick that we all do not like when schools get paid late. Representative Garofalo, pays their children what?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, and Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, Representative Biskins was far more generous in his assessment of this program than I would be. This program's been on the books. It has a 100% failure rate. If the effort is to integrate school districts, no school district that is enrolled in this program has become reintegrated. And the second point I would make is that you've talked about the kids and disadvantaged backgrounds and from ethnic minorities. How is this program working for us now? We've been in place since the late 90s. What's it doing to the achievement gap? What are we doing for academic test scores for minority kids? It's not working. And any thorough review of the facts would show that. So I support the Biskins Amendment, and I would encourage you to reconsider your position on the issue.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair and members, I'm really looking forward to the next year here under the work that I, very difficult work that I think Representative Newton and Representative Brown are going to help lead us. I intend to be involved in it, and know a number of members in the Policy Committee also do. You know, Representative Garofalo, it may well come down to a careful assessment that says none of this is working, so let's do something differently. I'm certainly open to that. What I'm not open to that to is to make that decision right here, right now, absent the kind of work that, very difficult work, I'm going to add, that I think we're taking on over the course of the next several months. I suspect you and I actually probably meet on more common ground in regards to good student achievement. That's squarely going to be on the table in regards to integration aid is currently right now in the bill. I think there's some very important movement that's happening here that is going to challenge all of the participants currently in this program to start thinking differently, and I want to make sure we have enough time and room to do that. So I would oppose your amendment right now and look forward to hopefully working with you during the course in the interim. Not with you, man. I want to come visit you down in Lakeville. Great community. Farmington, that's right next to it. And so anyway, I would oppose it because I think we're acting a little bit premature relative to what's on the table right now. So.
And we are slow with dealing with the legislative auditor's recommendation. And we had a couple of years, Representative Sikora had this committee, and they heard it but did nothing. And we had a work group on it last year that came to naught. But now this year we have some co-chairs and their committee who have actually made real progress, and we look forward to the getting to the bottom of the concerns that we all share about this significant amount of money that we want to be spent well. And I don't think any of us are quite certain that it is being spent as well as it could be, and that is why we have the working group and we need it. Representative Zapke.
Just one quick comment to the chair of my education caucus, who I dearly love. But I would love to have him, if this doesn't pass, and he does get on the integration aid committee next year, I would love to have you come to my district. We are one of the districts that doesn't take advantage of it, and we use it, and I would love to have you come and see what best practices are all about.
Thank you, Representative. And Representative Zepke is a member of this working group, and she's inviting you too, Representative Graffio. Hope you take her invitation seriously. If there's no other discussion, Representative Biskin renews the A14 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not pass. The amendment is not adopted. A6 is Representative Detmer. Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair, I move the A6 amendment.
Representative Detmer moves the A6 amendment. Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair and members, again, this is just to clean up current language in the state law statute. If you look on the amendment, lines 19, 112, 119, 123, we have a word that the military does not use. They do not use the basic versus base. They use the word base when it comes to their salary, active duty salary. And also on line 2-1, we've included the extracurricular activities. Districts have had a question about this. This just clarifies it for the districts. Some districts have been doing one thing, another district has been doing another thing, so it clarifies it. And also 2-1, it deals with the daily rate of active duty pay. And 2-6 is the person's daily rate of pay. This, again, is in current statute. It's put in place to support our military men and women who serve our country when they're mobilized for active duty service. Now, most school districts might have just a few people that would be benefit from this. I know my district is just a couple. I think if you would go to your districts and find out exactly how many they have that could be mobilized or could be activated during a conflict or a war. We're only talking about a handful of people maybe in each district. And then, are they mobilized at all? just a safety net there, especially for your lower ranking personnel. I've seen men and women who maybe are an E3 or E4, lower ranking, and have been teaching for 20 plus years. They'll take a big, big cut in pay. The district is actually ahead on this because they will then substitute a substitute teacher in there during that time frame. It could be for a few months or it could be a year, whatever. And basically what this is put in statute, the current language, was to protect these men and women who are serving their country. And again, this would not apply to a high-ranking officer or high-ranking enlisted because there wouldn't be a difference in base pay. So we're talking about a few people, and I think this is something that we really need to clarify the language for these school districts. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Detmer, and as members will remember, this is the bill that Representative Eastland and Representative Detmer worked on that we passed unanimously, I think, out of
right.
the committee. But it's always smart to put bills in more than one place when
right.
you don't know what's going to happen in the legislature.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Enzel. Any other comments? All right, Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, just for the committee's recollection, it wasn't unanimous because this representative did have a concern with the additional language on page 2, line 1, the and extracurriculars.
Thank you, Representative Diskin, for clarifying my memory. There's one in every crowd, as I often say to Representative Diskin. Representative
Depke. Thank you, Madam Chair. I also did not vote for it.
Okay, how many people did vote? Do you remember Representative Detmer? What was the vote?
I think there's all of us except two.
Oh, yeah. But I was afraid we had to hear
I think you're right.
People.
It was. I also had Depke. I had the problem with the word extracurricular.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, with that clarification of the chair's poor memory,
Madam Chair,
Representative Detmer.
Representative, on line 127, thank you for showing there's another word that needs to be changed. Line 127, change, please, there's a verbal amendment here. Thank you, Representative Dietrich. Should be base salary for the basic.
And Representative Detmer, the staff is looking, the others are always going from basic active duty to base active duty. But since this one is basic salary and not basic active duty, they're questioning if you really want to
do that. Okay, you're correct, I'm sorry.
Okay, very good. Any other discussion? If not, Representative Detmer renews his motion that for the A6 amendment to be adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion passes with a couple of dissenting votes. But it is adopted.
Madam Chair, like we say in the military, hoorah.
Okay, the A17, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the Labor Day school start provision, and aside from the fact that you're going to have enough problem getting votes for this bill as it is, I want to save Representative Ward from having to vote for a bill that has a Labor Day school start after, in this bill. It's bad for Northern Minnesota, and obviously, in total seriousness here, members, if we reintroduce this debate and we send... Hold on. Okay. If we reintroduce this debate to our local school boards, it's got the potential of delaying calendars. From an implementation standpoint, it's going to be too late for us to have this in effect for 2009 and 2010. This bill has already been killed in the Finance Committee. This is where this bill is going to go again. It's going to get killed in the Finance Committee again. So let's save the members who are voting for this bill and are opposed to this provision from having to vote in favor of a pre-Labor Day school start, and I would ask for member support.
Thank you, Representative Raffel. You're kind thinking of Representative Ward and all the other members that need to be saved. Any discussion on this one? We've had this members in front of us a couple of times, so I don't know that we have too many new things, but there's always Representative Ward. He's passionate on this issue.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, it is hugely important in our, not just in my area, but around the state that has the tourism industry so important to the whole economy. And this is about the economy of particular districts in the state of Minnesota. So, Representative Garofalo, thank you for bringing this forward. I will be supporting it.
Representative Benson.
Just a quick note, Madam Chair. I would like to see the committee or the legislature consider the fact that the United States of America has fewer class days than almost any of our economic competitors throughout the world. Instead of worrying about a voluntary program like this, we ought to be thinking about the length of the school day and the length of the school year and adequately funding public education through Miracle too.
Thank you very much,
Madam Chair. Representative Benson, if you feel that way, then perhaps you should support the governor's initiative where he set a standard definition for a minimum number of school days in the school year, something that is not contained in this bill. And I look forward to you advocating on behalf of that. So we have a guarantee in, either in terms of minimum of contact hours with students or in the classroom, so we are getting that bang for the buck.
We're on the Labor Day amendment. Representative Benson.
Just a quick response. Representative Garofalo, I probably will support it as soon as the governor comes up with the money, finally.
Back to the Labor Day amendment.
Madam Chair, just to that point?
Not to that point, because we're on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
Garofalo, you're going to get to talk about the governor's initiative to your heart content when we do two more amendments. But if you want to say something on the Labor Day issue, I'll call on you. Otherwise, you're going to have to wait two more amendments.
If by Labor Day...
Garofalo.
If by Labor Day, do you mean the fact that the governor actually proposes $185 million more in K-12 funding than this bill? That's Labor Day? Is that what you mean by that, or is that...
That's not it, Representative.
Okay,
All right, any other discussion? If not, Representative Garofalo renews his amendment for the A-17 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not pass, and the amendment is not adopted. A-21 is Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I introduce the A-21 amendment.
Representative Anderson moves the A-21 amendment. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. This deals with the issue of funding for special education students in private schools, and we think it's a fairness issue that those kids may be forced to enroll in public schools if this legislation stays in the bill. And just think it's ironic that this year, because of the stimulus money, there's going to be twice as much federal money available, part of which has to be spent on special education, and this legislation would in effect cut special education funding for part of our student population. And I would agree that there may be an area of concern in some of these areas of the statute, and I would be willing to fill out this questionnaire you had before us this morning or today and serve on a committee to work on the language to clarify those things. And there is a bit of a fairness issue here. I would agree with that. But let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater here and drop this whole area. So I would urge members to support the deleting Section 6 of this bill and also those statutes on page 141, delete line 20. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Anderson. Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, all this does is make for an even playing field so that private schools and parochial schools receive the same amount of funding as public schools do. It's not taking something from those schools.
Thank you. And members, you may recall that this did come from the special ed working group that Representative Newton worked with various advocates, and their charge was to look at where Minnesota exceeds the federal statutes. And, of course, the federal statutes are... we couldn't touch special education if we hadn't exceeded those. It's a federal mandate. But in this case, we heard from Representative Newton, and we heard from representatives of that task force. I think the School Board Association was the person who spoke in committee earlier to clarify that public schools get 68% of their special education dollars reimbursed, and it's 100% in the case of the private schools. So this is an equity issue just to make them all the same. And when we have other years, we can always have more clarification language for anything. This is everything is always done and undone every year, it seems, around here. So, but we have this amendment before us. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair and Representative Newton, it would appear on its face that this language would incentivize people to leave the private school system and go into the public school system. and therefore increase the special education cross-subsidy in our general education system. Can you explain to me why that I'm wrong about that?
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Garofalo. I really don't think that that's true. I don't see the large numbers of special ed students in the private schools or in the parochial schools. By and large, children who with severe handicaps are almost always in the public schools as it is, and I think we tend to talk about lesser disabilities, if you will, in those other institutions, and I don't see that we're going to have a lot of students coming to the public schools, and if we do, we welcome them. We'll give them a good education.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Now, Madam Chair and Representative Newton, no doubt we will provide a better education to them, but if they show up, that's an extra cost, both on the state side in terms of the per pupil funding allowance we're going to have to provide them, and then also because of the special education cross subsidy. So if that takes place, and I know we're waiting on a fiscal note here, if that does show that there's a cost, would you be willing to reconsider your position on this?
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The short answer is no. As you stated, the governor has put extra money into education, so perhaps we can use those funds.
Representative Garofalo. Oh, you were done. I thought you, so. Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought you were saying, Madam Chair, you wanted to talk again. All right. Then, Representative Anderson renews his motion that the A21 amendment, that we vote on the A21 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All right. The motion does not pass, and the amendment is not adopted. The last amendment is the A31 amendment. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A13 amendment to be before the committee.
Representative Dabney moves the A13 amendment. Representative Dabney.
Thank you. Members, this is brought forward by the department. I think of it as largely a technical accounting change that aligns the UFAR system with the new GASB requirements, and hopefully beyond the technical nature of it does provide greater transparency for school district finances.
Thank you. Any questions on the A13 amendment, Representative Biskin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, by striking the word reserve, typically in education finance, that word reserve is very specific and it's not funds that can then be used for general negotiations. In striking that word reserve, are we now opening these funds to general negotiations?
Madam Chair, I believe the rules of the committee today is that if you don't know the answer, you can call someone else up.
Representative Dabney, that's always the rules of the committee.
Okay.
And as you know, this came from the department. You want to call up Dr. Melcher?
Whoever pulls the short straw.
Dr. Melcher.
I just do not want to speak in any more places than necessary that I don't know.
Welcome, Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Madam Chair and members of the committee, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. The term reserve does normally require a specific thing to be happened. This is very unusual language. It says the district may reserve money. So it's a kind of a maybe it's reserved, maybe it isn't sort of a thing. And so the department has interpreted this in the past as a designated account as opposed to a reserved account, which is more of a local discretionary thing. But this is attempting to clean up some language that is out of date and inconsistent with current GASB standards, government accounting standards.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Dr. Melcher, it's been the department's interpretation of current law that word may negates the word reserve instead of being permissive, that the district can put money into an account set aside from negotiations, which is the way I read current law, but as the department has said that.
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Biskins, under the current UFAR standards, we have both a reserve account and a designated account. Mm-hmm. There is a reserved account for severance, which has not been specifically authorized in law and is inconsistent with the current governmental accounting standards. And there's also this provision, which the department has read the two in conjunction with each other, and has, so we have allowed a reserve, and we've also allowed a designation. And what this would do would be to, based on the recommendations of the department's financial management advisory committee, which is primarily consists of school district accountants, auditors that work with school districts, and the state auditor's office to try to clean this up and have one consistent way of treating this. But you are correct in saying that this will result in some dollars that are currently being recorded by districts as reserved to make them recorded as designated rather than as a reserve.
See no other questions. Griffin Dabney renews his, thank you, Dr. Melcher, renews his A13 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion passes and the amendment is adopted. So members, we now have our bill before us as amended. Before we go into comments on the bill, I just want, while we still are all here and have everybody's attention, even though this is our last meeting, and I want to thank all the members of this committee, now that we are done with our work for today, for all your hard work. There's a lot of members that had a lot of wonderful bills, and unfortunately, due to our huge budget deficit, we could only do some of those bills this year. And hopefully, when we come again with a new budget year, we'll be able to go back and do some of those, and they will already be ready. But we are going to have one more meeting, and it's going to be on April 21st at 8:30 a.m. here in the state office building in the basement hearing room. And it is when we have the Education Commission of the state that Representative Garofalo and I are commissioners on, and Governor Pawlenty is the chair of that group. Commissioner Segrin is a commissioner, and then some senators as well. We have invited them to come here and talk with us about anything that legislators want to talk about. Half of it about is going to be Q&A. But the beginning of it, they're going to talk about a variety of topics, and Representative Mariani helped with the policy topic, and the finance committee, we asked for the stimulus money clarification. We keep trying to figure out how we can interact as members of this committee with that money. It seems to all be coming and going without much input from us, and so maybe we can get a bit more information on that at that meeting. So I hope you can all attend. And then one more plug, to don't forget to fill out your survey as we go, before you go. Rep. Mariani.
Sure, just another little plug. If you get a chance, I think I had my staff send out a quick email, but I believe our House Research staff also sent out an email. Someone else did as well, perhaps another representative, about the New York Times article today that just sort of does this big, broad snapshot at the current thinking in the federal administration relative to NCLB, and identifies a couple of kind of emerging issues there, including the concept of a regional sort of competitive grant for states to apparently lead a new effort around state standards that it's not clear to me that may or may not lead to a direction for national assessments and standards. This is pretty big stuff. The article seems to indicate that the federal administration is acutely interested in working with governors, and I think that's certainly appropriate, but I would certainly hope that we as legislators are communicating with our congressional delegation and with the federal administration of the importance of certainly not bypassing the legislature in regards to any of these issues. So it's just a good snapshot look at what may be emerging out of the the new administration relative to assessments and standards and possible NCLB changes, I would encourage members to look it over.
Thank you very much. And I did notice that you sent that email, and I just haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I appreciate that very much. I know you are a diligent reader, it seems, of the New York Times, because you often forward really good articles that some of the rest of us might not have read. So thank you very much. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the main reason I would like to speak right now is to thank you for your gracious leadership of this committee. One of the things I particularly enjoyed early on was that you would set aside meetings around thematic bills. And I think that helped us be able to look at things, to prioritize, and to put into context those things that we really should be focusing on in terms of education. And I deeply appreciate that. And the other thing, there's so many groups that I wasn't as aware of it my first 2 years here, but this has been the most collaborative session that I recall between all the members of this body, it doesn't matter which party, but also the responsiveness of the Department of Education when we've had questions or needs. They have been in our offices immediately. I have deeply appreciated that. The University of Minnesota, MinSCU, the Business Partnership, the Chamber, everybody has been so responsive. And I think that this session for me has been about good policy and good decision making. And I do hope that our final bill, that after we conference it with the Senate, it is a bill that we can be proud of and that we can take back to our constituents and be very, very pleased with what we've been able to do in a very difficult year. So, again, thank you for your leadership.
Thank you very much, Representative Wells, and very well said. I'm just going to make a couple comments about the bill. Representative Garofalo wishes to as well, and then if other members care to comment, they can, but otherwise we'll proceed to vote. And, we heard a little preview of what Representative Garofalo is going to say, so I'm just going to say first, I think that we have done, I call this a Spartan bill, and I don't, brag about it like we did our first bill that we had last year before we had the compromise with the Senate and the governor. But I think that when you have a $7.5 billion deficit, which is what we do have this year, if you count inflation on both sides of the accounting ledger, which you really ought to do if you have taken any cues from Enron, then $7.5 billion is a lot of money to close a gap. And so to have a bill that protects education with steady funding, it's a Spartan bill, but it's quite an accomplishment. And, many of us left blood and fur on the floor to get this bill in the shape that it is in. And that was harder to do for the House than it was for the governor, because the House of Representatives, and actually the Senate too, actually balanced our budget. If you balance the budget, then you can't come out with a smidgen of extra money for much of anything if you have a $3 billion hole in the next biennium when we have to balance the budget for 4 years and not two. Then I think you have a whole bunch more of money to play with. But we have kept funding steady. Something that I think we all could agree upon that we did in this committee was make sure through the leadership of Representative Tilbury and his committee, a bipartisan committee that did a lot of hard work, we have significantly reduced the mandates, and all the groups in this room forwarded suggestions to us, and there were many that were taken and are in this bill. We had a commitment not to add any new mandates, and that is something that was very hard for us because we like new mandates as much as we don't like unfunded mandates. With no new money, we couldn't add any mandates in a hard year like this, and so we just had to bite our tongue, and Representative Detmer kindly didn't put us through the pain again of having to vote down a FIAD standards that we all support, or world language standards, or many others that are universally supported in this committee. We have significant reduction of special education mandates that was led by Representative Newton and led in the way of the people on the working group by Sue Abderholden of NAMI, Minnesota, and she worked with many of the other advocates. The School Board Association had already come up with a long list that Tom Deans had worked on. He's in the audience here as well. And Grace Kelleher, that worked with Elaine Keith and many other people in this audience, worked on coming up with many less special ed mandates that are significant. I don't think everybody realizes how significant the reduced special ed mandates are and how significant the work of the groups that did that. We had the Shared Services Working Group, chaired by Representative Swales and Representative McFarland. And we are very proud of what they have done, and we take it into the conference committee, knowing that the Senate has a bill that is not as universally loved as the bill that they worked on, and they have taken some hard knocks from a variety of sources for their leadership in that area. And we are proud of that bill, and I know that that's an area also, if members are looking at for what you want to do in the interim for continued work, they are willing also to continue on and build on the fine work that they have done. We have the leadership of Representative Slocum with the charter school changes that are here that many people in the audience are interested in and help work on, and some of those changes were hard fought and controversial in this committee, and I think the ones that are in the bill are universally supported by most of us here at this table, if not all of us. Some, you know, might want something else in it or not, but the ones that we do have, I think, are agreed upon and are a fine work led by Representative Slocum. As we said here earlier, we have started on integration revenue through the policy work of Representative Newton and Representative Brown, Representative Depke, and others that are working on that group, and they also will have to continue on in the interim. There's a lot more work to be done, but we have finally done the number one thing that the auditor suggested, which is to define integration revenue. What in the world is it for? That's huge. We haven't done that since the report came out in 2005. So it's fine that we finally got started, and we have a lot more work to be done. A large part of our bill is Representative Mariani and his committee's very fine policy work, and I know that he has highlighted the work that's in that bill in the policy committee, so I won't repeat that here, but there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that went into all of that policy work, and so we're grateful that that is in here. I would like to thank our very fine Vice Chair, John Ward, who you may not know how much work he does behind the scenes, but every week he meets with, when we have our staff meetings, believe it or not, we actually plan the meetings out, right, Representative Ward, and also get briefed ourselves on things we might need our minds refreshed on so we can help to lead the discussion in this committee. And so it's a pleasure to work with such an advocate for students who help fight with the blood and spur that goes on the floor when we're making sure we get what we think is a very fine target. With a balanced budget, I don't like the shift that the governor has proposed. I don't like even more the larger shift that the House has proposed. And so I think Representative Biskins has a good idea that we need to work on making those smaller as we go forward. And thank heavens that the other body that we don't usually like to mention when it comes to shifts, we do like to mention because they don't have any shifts in their bill. They are not paying the schools late. And they also raised $2 billion in taxes when the House is only raising $1.5 billion. And so when we get around to needing money in the conference committees, they have done a pretty good job, much as we don't like their cutting across the board. We hope we can work with them on that. They will see the House way and make sure that we do not cut education finance. And if we could just get Representative Garofalo to vote for the tax bill, I bet we could get the new money that the governor wants to with a balanced budget. Ready to say, Representative Rockwell.
Not a personnel.
It's your turn.
Let me go to other members.
You'll
go now.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, members, first of all, before I give my comments, I would ask members to take a look at their finance sheets. As I reference a couple of columns and a couple of rows and a couple of numbers that are going through. First of all, on line 271, all fund expenditures, not including shifts, you will notice that the governor's recommendation is a full $185 million above that of the recommendations of this committee. In addition, if you go to row 191, this is the education finance general fund amount for the upcoming biennium. The governor's recommendation is a full $507 million above this committee's recommendation. And perhaps most damningly and most disappointing is line 192, the fifth column from the right. You'll see that the difference between the base and the House appropriations for the upcoming biennium is a 14.8% reduction. And Madam Chair, members, back in 2003, the legislature passed a bill that froze per pupil funding like this bill did, and it shifted funds to the K-12 appropriation into the future fiscal year to 20%, as opposed to this bill with its unbelievable shift of 27%. At that time, members of the legislature and their advocacy groups described that bill as, quote, devastating and as mortgaging our future. Some even went through the task of labeling the bill as being the Leave Every Child Behind Act, and went to the point of wearing T-shirts on the House floor that said that. And now we have a bill with the similar composition to the upcoming biennium, and I have to tell you, the strange silence from the education funding advocacy groups is quite alarming. We have a bill before us that, unlike 2003, reduces the appropriation by 15%, and yet our local teachers union, the chief advocates for education funding, have remained silent. And in their efforts to protect the Democrat majority from an unfair education funding bill, they have actually undercut the chair's position in the conference committee. And I would urge the teachers union and the other education groups to get on board and contact your legislators, because if you remain silent, you're going to see an already low number get lower. And we're not going to be going towards the governor's number. We'll be going the wrong way towards the Senate's number. This bill refuses to reduce agency spending and prioritize those dollars for the classroom. It refuses to cap or eliminate the wasteful funding that exists in the integration funding formula. It funds none of the governor's K-12 initiatives, such as Pay for Progress, the Teacher Transformation Act, the U-Teach program, and the SMART program. In addition, it shifts the K-12, it increases the K-12 shift to 27%, an amount that is simply not sustainable for our school districts to support. And finally, it promises to address the school funding formula with the supposed Minnesota miracle in 4.5 years with no way to pay for it. And waiting 4.5 years to implement a plan, members, is not, in my idea, a solid strategic plan. So now I have to explain why I'm voting for the bill.
Representative Garofalo, you know what? I forgot to mention in my glowing comments about the Spartan bill about the new Minnesota miracle. Thank you for reminding me that you can finish off. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, it's important that members of the committee and the public know why I'm voting for this bill. And the truth of the matter is that when Representative Grayling graciously held the committee hearing down in Farmington, she got a hold of some photos for me from high school.
Yes.
And been blackmailing me, forcing me to vote for a bill. No, that's not true.
And it's actually his daughter, Abby, who brought the photos out. And in case anyone hasn't seen them, they are good for blackmail.
Yeah.
Lots of curly hair.
But, Madam Chair, in all seriousness, earlier this session I met with Representative Grayling, and privately I said this to her, and I'll say this publicly, is that I actually believe you need our help on the Republican side of the aisle. This is not going to be like 2003 where we just, where the Democrats gave 3 votes and one side ran everything through. This is a historic budget deficit, and we need to have everybody at the table. Now, I had, had I known what the bill was going to look like, maybe I perhaps not would have not made that promise, but I had a choice. I could either vote for the bill, or I could work on building a time machine and going back in time and rescinding that promise, and that just wasn't an option. So, Madam Chair, members, if the bill comes out of conference committee like this, there's not a chance I'm going to be voting for it. I quite frankly don't understand why we're making the members go through the this march of voting for a bill that the governor would clearly veto and require more education funding, but sometimes the process has to work its way out. And so reasonable people will disagree on this today, and Madam Chair, I do appreciate you being a fair chair who schedules hearings on both sides of the aisle. You start the meetings on time, you end them on time, and I wish more members did that. And Madam Chair, with that, I would request a roll call on House File 2 when we cast that vote. Thank
you. Roll call has been requested. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I had some of the same concerns with the bill that Representative Garofalo mentioned, so I'm not going to go through them again because they're pretty similar, and I will not be supporting the bill. Unfortunately, it's the second time in my term here that I've not been able to support a K-12 bill. And I'm going to be a little bit more general, I guess, in my comments, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd like to compliment you on the operation of the committee this year. I think I'm fair in saying that I liked it better than the last time.
You were gracious in your lavish with your criticisms last year, and I'm glad to know that you're lavish in your praises this year. Thank you. And because we both agreed, we heard every single member's bills last year, and that meant we couldn't focus enough. I was overreacting to when I was in the minority and didn't get hardly any bills heard, nor any minority members. So we heard all the minority member bills as well as all the majority member bills. But you're right, that was overkill. So this is better. And why is it, Representative?
Well, in that regard, and it is a balance, Madam Chair, I understand that. And we talked about that, and I was pretty straightforward. I felt that there wasn't enough time for discussion last year. We listened to bills, we ran them through, and you were a time manager, and we know that. And the people who are here, they get to testify, know that. And I think it's a good thing. But this year was much better. We had a chance to discuss issues. And even though there was time limits, we got a chance to discuss. And that was my criticism. And I just had to acknowledge the fact that you took that to heart and probably it was just me, but thought about it. And I appreciate that. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. But having said that, my concerns, and I'm looking back to my notes at the beginning of the year when we talked about what our concerns were and what our issues were. And I had made my notes, and I'm looking back on those, and we did it probably the first time or so. And I was concerned about our funding mechanism, and I know you're trying to address that with your House File 2. But I wanted more control and flexibility, and I thought local management was very, very important. And I thought, particularly in a year like this where we knew funding was going to be short, that we needed to give more and more opportunities for local school boards to be efficient and flexible in how they use their monies. And I'm not sure we accomplished that like we maybe could have. I'm not sure we focused as much as we could have on a system that's conducive for what I call dynamic and flexible, and quite frankly, learning and high expectations. And in fact, my disappointment that I've expressed previous times with amendments regarding the grad and that sort of thing, lowering expectations. And I understand the reasons, and I can go through them and understand them, but I can't agree with doing that. So that's a bit of a disappointment for me. And I guess beyond that, it's just the fact that it's interesting because I'm not one that it's about how much money we do, but this is less money significantly than what the governor proposed, and a much larger shift than has ever been done before. And that's a bit disappointing because we could have done more, we could have done better. And the governor wanted to find a way to increase funding to education in a very, very difficult year, and I understand the dynamics of that. I would like to have seen us try to jump on board and do that, and the fact that we didn't, and the fact that there is less money, and I'll echo my concerns that Representative Garofalo talked about the education advocates out there, and I won't include just the union but others. I'd like to talk about some of the details here, but not much talk about the fact that that your bill, Madam Chair, just does not have the resources that the governor tried to propose to do for education, and I think it's a huge investment we need to be making, and we need to find ways to do it. So for that reason, again, thank you for the way you did the committee, and I look forward to next year. We'll have a chance to have some more discussion and maybe work at some of these things, and I've enjoyed the time.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. I've enjoyed working with you as well. Representative Deputy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm also not going to be supporting the bill today, but I did want to tell you why, and it's primarily one reason, but before I say that, I wanted to tell you I appreciate your leadership, I appreciate getting to know you and the other members better, it's my first time, and I think I appreciate you most because you're trying to do what is best for the schools in this state, and that is to come up with a stabilized funding mechanism. And that's something that my school district feel very strongly about, and when I first talked to them last summer, that's what they wanted. But the world has changed a lot since last summer, and I, in good conscience, with many of my school districts sitting in the audience today, cannot support obligating our citizens and others in the state and our future legislators to billions of dollars worth of increased revenue needs 5 years from now. I know that that's something that's been done in a lot of other areas. I don't believe in doing that. So I can't support it, but I want to thank you for your passion. I want to thank you for trying your best to do what you think is best for the schools in the state.
Thank you, Representative. And when we get out of our economic slump, I look forward to your support for the new Minnesota Miracle, because I know a lot of those pieces are things you've talked about. So thank you very much for your kind words as well. Mm-hmm. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to talk in support of the bill. And but I want to start by just saying thank you for your leadership, your passion, your determination. I've been to battle with you, and I would choose you to be with battle with anybody down here. And so thank you for determination and never giving up. And, you know, it takes great leaders to... great leaders are great leaders because they surround themselves with great people. and I believe that. And you got, and all you people sitting here are great people. You are great leaders as well for our children. You know, you hear a lot about schools, about education, but that word children is so important. And you know what? You are great champions of children. And so are you advocates out in that audience. It's been a remarkable session for me. One of the most challenging, one of the most difficult in my short term. But serving with you people on this committee and having the advocates out there champion for people has been absolutely remarkable. Is this a perfect bill? Probably not. No, it's not. I remember telling a leader shortly a couple weeks ago that there's not many perfect bills that come on that we get a chance to vote on down here. There's always problems with almost every bill that we vote on and that we legislate. Different pieces some people like, different pieces some people hate. But this bill offers a lot of hope and promise, in my opinion, for the future of our children and their education in the state of Minnesota. And I'm not going to go on and belabor this, but Mary Ciccone said it best yesterday when she said, you know, we can't keep doing the same thing and get the same results, because that's insane. We are trying something new, even in a year when financially we are really, really stressed and is very difficult. I look at the Growth and Justice Smart Investments for Minnesota Students. I look at advocates that are promoting other situations for our children. But when Mary Ciccone said, you know what, this bill brings hope and promise for the future of our children, I think she hit it right on the head. And I thank you for House File 2. I thank you for all of the work that you've done, Madam Chair, but also all the work that you members have done and your advocates have done. So I really am gracious for this bill. I'm grateful for this bill, and I'm proud to support this bill. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. And I believe this is a real solid bill that recognizes the very difficult budget situation that we're in. Members, we have a $6.4 billion deficit, $7.5 if you count inflation. But even at 6.4, that's a 33% higher budget deficit than we had in 2003 that was mentioned. And I think, you know, there's some comments made on why aren't all these funding groups just powering away and so forth. I think people around this state recognize the seriousness of the budget situation we are in. Now, some will try to minimize how steep of a cliff we're at right now, but you know, there's some comparisons to the governor's budget, and actually, the DFL budget overall cuts more than the governor's. $1.6 billion, I think $1.5 billion, cuts more, and goes further to actually solve the structural deficit. And when you do that, it's going to make it more difficult to put dollars in there. But there is no question, there is no question here that education is our top priority. I chair the property tax division, and those who serve on that property tax division know we had to cut this year $250 million, about 7% of our budget, and in the next year, the next biennium, $362 million. So when you can hold 40% of the budget harmless in education, is showing that education is our top priority, without a doubt. There's no question there. And so I think this is a bill that makes tough decisions in a tough economic and budget time. It holds education harmless, which I think everyone realizes, Madam Chair, this was a tremendous effort on your part to do that. But at the same time, and maybe even more important, that it, especially in Article 2, which I believe is the one that deals with excellence in education, we go a long ways in working towards closing the achievement gap, which I think for all of us should be the number one concern. And I think we have a number of factors in here, and with Representative Mariani's efforts, that move us in that direction. So it may not be something we all want, but I think considering the economic and budgetary challenges we have, this is a very solid bill. Thank you,
Representative Marquardt. I don't see anyone else on the list to talk, and Representative Ward covered the new Minnesota miracle. And people have heard me talk about that a lot. The House File 2 is the bill that we have, and Article 9 now has become the new Minnesota miracle. And members, one of the reasons, even though some don't feel comfortable putting it in to the year 2014, that I feel strongly, and I think many members around here feel strongly, as well as the education advocates, is because it does exactly what Representative Grotlo and Representative Demmer are calling for. It focuses our education voice on the future, and we then can see what all the different types of fairnesses and equity and not relying on property taxes. So we have the plan handed to us by PS Minnesota, fleshed out by our staff, supported all around the state of Minnesota in every type of district when we've had many, many hearings, starting with the one in Representative Dietrich's district last summer. And we will have more unified voice because of the work that PS Minnesota did, because of the work that we have, because this is in the bill. And I have always thought it would be a long battle. The first Minnesota miracle took several years to pass, and it also took a new governor who wasn't afraid to put the money where his mouth is and balance the budget and not rely on so many regressive property taxes and the inequities of haves and have-nots. That's the kind of leadership we need to get this bill, and that's where we have to take this battle next. And with that, the roll call has been requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Grayling?
Yes.
Anderson?
No.
Endel?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Fiskin?
No.
Dabney?
Yes.
Demmer?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Dietrich?
Yes.
Stepke?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Mariani?
Yes.
Marquardt?
Yes.
McFarland?
No.
Morgan?
Yes.
Newton?
Yes.
Slocum?
Yes.
Swales?
Yes.
Tilbury?
Yes.
Ward?
Yes.
There being 15 ayes and 6 nays, the House File 2 is passed to the Finance Committee. So thank you, members, and even though we don't count that we started at 1:45, we're ending the meeting 2 minutes early. Thank you all very much. The meeting is adjourned.